At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Evangelical Dark Web. Tonight, we're going to be bringing back an old friend of ours, Brandon Durham. He's been on here, I believe, twice already. And I believe the past times he's come on here, he's talked about his Dominion dating platform that he's building or has spent. Maybe we'll get an update on that tonight. But more recently, he's been wrongfully terminated from his church. So we're going to get to hear his story and hopefully get some encouragement for a lot of pastors out there that might hold similar views. Cause you know, he's a kindred spirit, you know, with a lot of people who are in the church that maybe have anonymous accounts, maybe have views that are not popularly accepted, even in church communities sometimes. And that happens. So hopefully we have some words of encouragement for believers that find themselves in this situation, whether they're pastors or laymen. So I want to be encouraging tonight, even though we aren't speaking on the best of circumstances. So JB, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, Raymond. It's good to be with you again and your audience. So thanks for having me on.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So you put out a video earlier this week. It discussed a lot of the events leading up to you being terminated by your church, which seems pretty convoluted. So I guess, you know, the first thing we should do is kind of break down how exactly things went. So it started with a Mother's Day sermon. And I guess the question on so many people's mind is, what exactly did you say on Mother's Day that offended a youth pastor's wife? Which kind of started the snow. It was kind of like that little domino that, if you've seen the meme, or the snowball that went to the hill. So what exactly started this?
It's kind of funny because there's a lot of joking that goes on these days about how preachers will hit the men hard on Father's Day about how they need to do better. And then they'll kind of sweet talk the ladies on Mother's Day. And so there's a lot of kind of humor around that. And I guess the irony is I got fired on a Mother's Day sermon. So I guess you can do it. I don't know if I'm the first man in history to be fired for a Mother's Day sermon. And I wasn't technically fired for a Mother's Day sermon. That was the alleged kind of initial reason for upsetting certain folks in the church. But all I can say is I was not trying to get fired. I was not trying to be spicy in my sermon. In fact, I posted my sermon outline on Twitter this week because folks were trying to, you know, raise suspicion that I quote unquote asked for it. But if you look at my sermon outline, which is not a complete representation of what I preach, but it at least gives you the broad idea of my sermon. And my title for that sermon was A Positive Vision for Marriage and Motherhood. And so the whole tenor of the message was to promote and protect motherhood as a, and to paint a compelling and biblical picture of motherhood. It was not a polemical, jab to incite anger. It was to try to stir a desire for motherhood and increase our appreciation for motherhood. But it didn't go that way for some folks.
Right. So is it because what you said was seen as excluding certain women from the from the celebration that, you know, maybe they were accustomed to it in years past or would be accustomed to at other churches? Or was it mostly, you know, excluding, like, you know, because you focused on marriage, you know, single mothers got maybe felt miffed or maybe would have, but even though the person who was most offended was a married, presumably mother, or did they not have children?
Well, so Mother's Day is a tricky subject. I mean, first of all, I'm not of the mind that you have to preach a sermon for women on Mother's Day. If I'm in a book study, like through a book of the Bible, and we're at Mother's Day, I'm typically not going to deviate from my book's sermon to honor a kind of a modern holiday or for mothers. So, but in this instance, I was a new pastor. I was not in a book study. It was summer. I took a cultural day that honors mothers, and I used that as an opportunity. So, I mean, I think preachers should have a sense of occasion and use it to our advantage. And that's what I tried to do then. And pastors have to know our audience, and we have to speak to a broad audience. So I was trying to bring a message that was going to edify the whole church. And so I know that I preached this message on Mother's Day, aware that there were women in the church who were barren, who couldn't have children, my own wife being one of them. And so I took, an intentional moment in the sermon to speak to barren women. And I talked about how the gospel redeems motherhood for barren women because it gives them a place in the church to be spiritual mothers and in the community. So I had a 60-year-old lady in the church come up to me after that message, and she was in tears. She was thanking me profusely for not forgetting barren women. She says, we normally get kind of forgotten on Mother's Day, and it's a painful time for barren women. But there was nothing like that. And in fact, I think the lady who got upset already had an axe to grind. So, you know, the backstory is that, I was smeared online 3 years ago, and that goes back to Dominion dating and making the New York Post and all the slander and libel online that really dirtied up my reputation. And so, you know, when you're a new pastor coming in, they're going to Google you and they're going to research you. And there was a group, I don't know how big they were, but they had done that, but they had kept it to themselves. And so they had all these issues with me. Basically, it offended their feminist sensibilities. And so they did not want me there to begin with, but they kept all of that to themselves until after I was voted in as pastor, which was the Sunday after that Mother's Day sermon. But
so speak now or forever hold your peace. And they held their peace.
They held their peace. Then. And then they went about in an underhanded way to sabotage my ministry. And there were hints of that in the interview process. There was a couple of ladies on the search committee. All this happened in the shadows, from the shadows. And so I have to do my best to try to piece it together. But certainly kind of one of the matriarchs of the church, one of the older ladies that had a lot of influence, her husband was on the committee. In fact, he had an outsized influence in that church. He was both the youth pastor and a deacon.
How do you do the office of a pastor and a deacon?
You know, that's kind of a monopoly on influence there. But anyways,
especially in a Baptist church,
right? And they ran sound and they ran finances for. So they were like very important to the church and in the community. They carried a lot of weight. So they tried to throw their weight around, and it all came down to the fact that I was preaching a biblical view of marriage, of headship and submission, of gender distinctions, gender duties, gender relationships within marriage, within the church. This just was not something that was palatable to a small minority in the church that had an outsized influence. And I literally got fired like a month after being hired. I hadn't even moved into the parsonage yet. they'd barely taken down the welcome sign, and they were telling me to hit the road. So
how would you characterize the opposition to you, and what, you know, to not straw man their positions, what would you say their position is? Do you think they're like the mutual submission crowd? Are they full bore, you know, feminists that maybe support like homosexual marriage? Where do you think? I don't think they go that far, but I'm just asking, like, what would be their actual position if it's not what you ascribed, which, you know, more patriarchal, I guess. What is their actual position if they oppose what you were saying?
Well, I would say a few things. One, I would say they probably have never thought it through. They probably could not give a kind of a consistent, coherent view or articulation of what they believe, which is to say they've not been taught about it. They are operating from basically the world's kind of paradigm for women. They're coming from the position that we've always—it's basically an egalitarian position. So now, if you got in a room with them and you asked, "Do you believe women can be pastors?" Well, they would say no. But everything else is on the table. I can tell you that there was it was voiced that they didn't think women should submit to their husbands. That was one thing. And then they were wanting they wanted power and position in the church just shy of being the pastors. So teaching Sunday school.
And that seems to be like, you know, if you're in that deep, it's because, you know, there might not be enough money to be a full-time pastor, or you don't want the commitment or the heat. I don't know. But it's like, you already wield this much power in the church. Why not, you know, take up more responsibility, I guess, since you already want this level of power and influence? It's kind of weird to me, yeah. But, you know,
well,
better to be a kingmaker, I guess.
Well, the good thing is, right now, this issue is getting a lot of attention. There's a lot of people that are talking about this and giving us some very helpful lenses to understand what exactly is taking place in the typical church. And so one of those lenses is Jeff Wright and the Backwoods Belief podcast. They did an episode called Shadow Elders. And that one just looked at how influential women in the church, they steer the leadership from the shadows. And that's how they control the church towards their own ends, their own agendas. And that is a corrupted, a sinful tendency in women that goes back to the garden. So you look at Genesis when God talks about how Eve's nature was corrupted by the fall. He said, your desire will be for your husband to overtake and to kind of steer him or manipulate him and subdue him. And that was a corruption of her good desire of her nature. And you see that playing out in the church in a kind of a similar way. So that's one lens. Another lens would be Michael Foster and Non Tenet at It's Good to Be a Man. They have an article on how white knights and overly influential women are ruining the church. And that dynamic, that's another angle on that dynamic. And then Joe Rigney has a book out, Leadership and Emotional Sabotage. And that really drills down to how people's base passions and desires can really steer a church off a cliff if not corrected. So I commend those to anyone wanting to look into it, and I'm happy to delve into any of those if you know, want to talk about it.
So in your video, you talked about how the initial charge of miffing the youth pastor's wife at the sermon on Mother's Day was eventually overruled. Like, you know, they dismissed the charge and you were kind of exonerated in the meeting with the deacons.
That's right.
And they, you know, you said that they didn't go through proper channels of, you know, if they had an offense to take it, you know, through proper channels, one-on-one conversation and then two or three witnesses and stuff like that. They didn't do that. And then that these people largely agreed with you. And then you later they have new charges up against you. And I think you described in between that, that the youth pastor resigned in protest. Is that what happens?
So, yeah. So just to clarify, the youth pastor and his wife, they made the original initial move to try to get me fired. They, instead of coming to me and having a conversation to try to seek clarity, to make sure, you know, they have a reason to be concerned, they jumped immediately to trying to, and this is not me, you know, filling in gaps with speculation. They told me this. They were offended by this, the Mother's Day sermon, and so they began to research me on the internet, which is to say they dug up a bunch of dirt on me. They went back and revisited all of the old slander and gossip, and there's just mounds and mounds of slander on the internet that they dug up. And I was alerted to it first because I received a call from a church I pastored before, letting me know that they had called them and told them that they had found a bunch of stuff on the internet about me and they had a lot of concerns. So they were really trying to build their case. And then it came to light that they had met behind my back in a series of three meetings with our deacons, campaigning to have me fired. So I was exonerated from all of their accusations. And now you asked, did they bring up new accusations after that? So they resigned in protest. And I mean, they just quit immediately. So they just like left us in the lurch. They were gone. So the next Sunday they weren't there. So we were scrambling to fill in with everything. You know, it was not, they didn't leave well. They did not leave well. And then, you know, you fast forward, I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks after that, when the deacons come to me and tell me half the church is threatening to leave, if you stay. And so that's when they said, you need to stay home Sunday and we're going to have a family meeting with the church to discuss. And so I cannot answer the question of did they bring new accusations, because I was never allowed to face my accusers after that. And so I have no idea what accusations they brought against me. I have no idea if there was truth or lies or a mixture. I just will never know, because it happened. I was not permitted to be there to defend myself. And so I got a call that Sunday afternoon and they informed me that the church had voted almost, they said unanimously, someone told me it was basically unanimously, had voted to dismiss me. So in a matter of about 4 weeks, a month, 4 or 5 weeks, whatever it was, that church went from almost unanimous in their decision to call me as pastor to almost unanimous to dismiss me as pastor.
Do you know if there's a recorded vote or?
No, I mean, I just, someone said it was.
Okay.
One deacon said unanimous. One said it was maybe a couple that abstained or something like that. I'll never know. I was not handed any documentation. It was just a phone call. So
you just got a phone call telling you it's over.
Yeah. You know, stop packing. You're not coming.
Now, in your announcement, you talked about, you know, Calvinism was a proxy issue. And then you talked about some other grievances that were brought up.
That's right.
When exactly were those brought up in this whole process?
So the only accusations that I know about came primarily from the meeting I had with the deacons where the youth pastor tried to have me fired. In that meeting, I was basically put in the hot seat by the deacon, by the youth pastor. And I was basically grilled for about an hour, hour and a half on various accusations. And then the only other time was the brief meeting I had 4 days before I was fired. And that's where it was more just murmurs of, you know, there's a group threatening to leave if you're here. And then the accusations at that point were just very vague. I heard things like, you know, we don't want a tyrant. Another one was your preaching has changed.
After 4 weeks, you know, yeah,
it's kind of a blame shift there. And then, you know.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
And then, so, you know, just basically there was a subtle effort to try to blame shift because I think they were grasping for anything to rationalize what they were about to do. They kind of made up.
I found the Reformed theology complaint to be very surprising. It's like, how does it not come up in a vetting process?
Right.
Especially in a Southern Baptist church where that's, pretty contentious in a Southern Baptist church, or it can be.
That's right. It can
be. It's like, if they didn't know that, it's like, well, you didn't ask. Yeah. You know, you can just give the SpongeBob, classic SpongeBob answer.
Yeah.
You didn't
ask. All I will say on that is there's people in every kind of tradition or vein of the church that can be obnoxious. We all know obnoxious Reformed people. I grew up in the Southern Baptist, so these are my people. I came to Reformed faith, you know, later in life, and it's always been by virtue of my being in the convention, the Southern Baptist Convention, I've always had to preach Reformed doctrines in the background. So I've never been in your face with my Reformed distinctives. And in other words, I know how to preach to a Southern Baptist crowd in a way that connects and edifies and is not heavy-handed in pressing people beyond where they're ready to go. My job is to be a shepherd, is to lead people, not coerce people or anything like that. So when I preached for them as interim I must have been 5 or 6 weeks, at least. I really don't remember. I can go back and get the timeline, but I preached for them. And I did not hide the fact that I was a Calvinist. I just never talked about it.
If someone knew, the 5 points of Calvinism, they would have grasped that you were a Calvinist.
Well,
by listening to is what you're kind of saying, or they would have, gathered that you were more Calvinist.
Well, the only tell I gave of my Calvinist leanings is I quote Reformed sources in my sermons.
Oh, okay.
So, the irony is, the irony is I preach Reformed doctrine, a Reformed view of any given text. But I'm not saying the word Reformed. I'm not saying the word Calvinism, but I'm quoting every single sermon. I'm quoting from my go-to sources, which is guys like Matthew Henry, Reformed, Charles Spurgeon, John Calvin, Martin Luther, Puritans, on and on you could go. And I don't just quote from Calvinists, but that is primarily who I am citing when I preach. And, you know, it really, most people could not tell you what Calvinism is in the Southern Baptist Convention. It's just become this boogeyman that people have fear-mongered over so much that it makes people kind of crazy. So
now the next thing you mentioned was that this was you kind of said that Calvinism was a proxy for affinity for their larger complaint was your affinity for Doug Wilson. And I thought that was fascinating, fascinating guilt by association. Like I wouldn't go to I wouldn't necessarily, charge a pastor with, oh, you love Tim Keller, even though that's way worse, but I wouldn't, use that as a charge. That's a weird level of guilt by association. Now with you, you've had some run-ins with the examining Moscow crowd, which how about you kind of explain those run-ins a little bit, because it kind of relates to why they went after you for the Doug Wilson Association.
And let me preface by saying I never mentioned Doug Wilson's name from the pulpit or to anyone in that church the entire time I was there. like not once. And it's funny because I would pepper in Doug Wilson quotes infrequently, but it would always be interjected, low key, like one pastor said this, this is what one pastor has to say. It was never his name. And that's the hilarity to me is the few occasions when I quoted Doug Wilson, everyone loved it. They're like, amen, that sounds great. That makes sense. That's spot on. And then they find out, oh, this guy likes Doug Wilson. And then they get on the internet and it's a hate fest. So yeah, that too is a proxy, because Doug Wilson is the great, he's the great sexist, if you read the internet. So that's the real issue, is they didn't like my views on women. And so so the dynamic at the church, and then I'll come back to your question. Sorry, this is just a brief. The dynamic at the church is that it was a rural church, and the older folks were very much aligned with me on my views of women. When this deacon tried to get me fired, the other deacons were saying, well, we agree with the pastor. As I gave my answers, they told me that's thoroughly biblical. I agree with that. In discussing my views on women. When I preached the Mother's Day sermon, I had a deacon tell me that was a great message. When I preached most of my messages, I had deacons and the older folks saying that blessed me. That was solid. Thank you. So what the younger crowd had to do is, because they would never have got me ousted based on my views on women. The older crowd, their parents and grandparents would have told them, you guys are wrong. The Bible is clear on these things. They would have told them that. So what they had to do was oust me via proxy. They had to show that I appreciated a very dangerous man, a racist and a sexist like Doug Wilson. And they had to show.
The older people might fall for the racist part when they wouldn't have fallen for the sexist part.
Right. So, and that is all, if you pay attention to how Examining Moscow operates, that smut rag on social media, they do the same thing. They try to attack Doug Wilson at different angles because they want to bring a consensus from these different groups.
Right. They'll attack him with anything.
Yeah. So good, they know that.
Bad.
Know, yeah, that's right.
False. True, but not even bad, you know.
And this is how the enemy has operated throughout history. You read in Acts, when you read Acts, that's how they would get at Paul, the Apostle Paul. They would say, or other men, they would say they're associating with these, you know, rabble-rousers and these insurrectionists, and that's how they would try to get you. And that's why people didn't want to associate with Paul, because he was, you know, kind of persona non grata because of the way the mob portrayed him. And so, which is why I told Timothy, don't be ashamed of the gospel or of me. Don't be ashamed of me, because there was a pressure to be ashamed of Paul. That's what the crowd was trying to do, was that's what Saul Alinsky said you do. You pick a target and you freeze that target and you polarize that target, and you go after, you single out one person and you make them the object of your scorn and your accusations, and then that's how you take down the movement. You single out one person. And so I think they've done that to Doug Wilson. And if it wasn't Doug Wilson, it would be someone else. They always look for someone to single out and to smear them. And then it's guilt by association. Anyone else that does it, they try to link you to that bad person. They did that with Trump too, right? So
I feel like Trump did guilt by association with himself too, but you know,
sure. He's
when he's hanging out with John Bolton and stuff. Yeah, but anyway.
Sure. You can,
sorry, personnel decision. You know?
Critique anyone. But
I mean, there's certain things where you can use guilt by association for, and you know, I try to be very transparent with, you know, discernment ministry, you know, is someone a false teacher or not? And association alone isn't something you can, you know, nail someone on. Oh, this person did a conference with this person. Like, that is a stupid way to say that someone's a false teacher. Now, if someone, say, in ministry yoked, you know, Chris Vallotton at Bethel Reading with Bill Johnson. Okay, far bigger, you know, that's yoking. That's not necessarily just a mere association.
Yeah.
But, you know, Doug Wilson, you know, I don't think he's perfect by any means, but I think he's a much more helpful voice than he is hurtful. And we could use a lot more of that. And, you know, that's an odd thing to keep out. So how many, in your video, you talked about your old church being called about this.
Hmm.
Yep. And they, I guess they stuck up for you and stuff.
No. So it's funny. You know, I don't know why they called me to alert me. I do not know why. I think the man who called me was a kind man. Maybe he just felt bad for me, but the, that church, it was the same issue. They also tried to run me off. Now I resigned there. I was not fired there, but I resigned there because there was that church. 3 months into my ministry there, that's when the New York Post thing happened. And so, you know, I was 2 weeks into that pastorate when the New York Post reported that I did blackface. and if true,
that's not even a sin.
Right. First of all, I didn't do it, but it's like I'm a nobody trying to live my life and the New York Post is sticking their nose in there. Like, it's just an insanity. I mean, it's, what are the odds of that would ever happen? But that, you know, that eventually made its way back. And of course it was there. It was there. I'm sure they got that news pretty quick on me. And then they were fomenting it under, you know, just under the surface for a while. But about 3 months in is when they launched a full-on scale smear campaign to try to run me out of town. And it was a coordination between, mostly a bunch of women in the church and outside the church, and just really, these women are feminists. What are they? Self-identify as feminists. They were offended. Their feminist mindset was offended by my biblical view on marriage and sexuality in the project I'm trying to do with Dominion Dating. And so they were determined to run me out of town. Now, it was just a huge ordeal. It destroyed my ministry at that church overnight. Sorry, my dog is bothering me. I'm getting ADD here. Sorry.
All good. I got to close the door when I record so they don't get, assaulted by a cat,
I hear you. So, yeah. But this church was not trying to help my case. And the pastor that took the pastor that replaced me, let's just say he's not my biggest fan, and I'm not going to disparage him here, even though I called him. I'll just say I called him and asked him who called, and he wouldn't tell me who called or what they talked about. But and I don't think he's responsible for getting me fired, but I don't think he helped my case. And I think he helped them get me fired because I think they were looking for the legitimacy.
It was a fishing expedition.
Yeah. And they were hoping that if it came from a pastor and from a church, that would legitimize their concerns. But really at the end of the day, it's still gossip. What this youth pastor and pastor did was gossip about me behind my back. It's sinful. It helped get me fired, and they should repent.
And especially since you never got the chance to answer any charges.
That's right. And it was all behind my back. And so, their church, deserves better than for a guy to operate like that. But he did it, and that's between him and God. But I know God's going to take care of me. I do know that he has, on a couple of points, framed things about me to my face that are disingenuous and not true. So I don't have a reason to believe that he did otherwise behind my back when he's done that to my face. So that's how that happened.
So I got a few more questions for sure. One, what happened to the youth pastor? Was he reinstated at the church? Or is he still gone in protest running a shadow government?
Well, time will tell on that. My recommendation to the deacons was this man has shown himself to not be biblically qualified to be in leadership. He has demonstrated he's not leading his own wife. He's allowing his wife to foment division. They pouted and scowled and protested and went, and fomented division around my leadership, basically from the start. So that kind of underhanded behavior, I think is disqualifying. It's telling. They assured me that they would not reinstate him in my departure, that they would not reinstate him. But I will tell you this, if they can't stand up to the crowd that wanted me gone, how are they going to stand up to the crowd if the crowd wants the youth pastor back? So we'll see. Time will tell on that question.
All right. You mentioned Dominion Dating. What's the latest update on that? I know we've had you on to talk about it. It was a live stream called Helping Chads Find Trads. I thought it was a pretty good name myself.
There you go. Very good name.
How are you on the live stream?
I'm happy to report that by God's grace, we are operational. We've had our team has put together a solid platform. Everything is functioning as it needs to be. And I think We've got between 200 and 300 users right now. Our goal is to scale it to 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000 over the next, several years. That's our goal. We want to have a very solid network. So of like-minded, marriage-minded singles. We're not monetizing it just yet because we want to scale it to a certain size before we charge. So it is free right now. You just have to, you have to go to dominiondating.com and you'll be able to read our members agreement. And if you can sign off on our distinctives for biblical marriage and sexuality, and then our orthodoxy, our doctrinal statement. And then you have to be a member in good standing of a church for 3 months minimum. And then you need a pastoral endorsement. And so we require a verified pastoral endorsement for everyone that uses our network. And
you've gotten 200 to 400 people to sign up?
Yeah, we've got between 200 and 300 and literally every day people are joining. And we're slow and steady. I think it will pick up speed. We've launched a podcast called the Pursuit of Marriage podcast, which you can find.
I think that's a good way to market it for sure. Yeah,
I think so. And so you can check that out. And we're trying to be a ministry that encourages and instructs and helps singles get a biblical paradigm for marriage and for the pursuit of marriage, so that it's not like this like code you can't crack if you didn't grow up with this teaching. Come around on social media or online. We've already had 2 engagements, so we're just getting started.
Out of that, let's just assume that it's a little bit more even. I'll say there's 100 women on there, only one of them has to be,
that's right.
It's pretty, the whole experience to be a success. Only one.
The ratio between men and women is pretty close. We have a few more men. We have a few more men, but I think
I would imagine a lot of dating services are, very much sausage factories.
Yeah.
In terms of the distribution.
Yeah. But, we're working hard to keep the ratio right and to keep the group pure, from a doctrinal and worldview.
And I do got to say, just to speak to my audience, it is not a good dating market out there. I know you've talked about that in the past, and this is a service that is made to help people out. It's not necessarily foolproof, but
that's right.
I believe one of the last times you came on here, you basically just said, you're casting your net wherever you can because in order to find a better one. But what he's trying to do is build a better pond for you to go fishing in. So I'm mixing a lot of metaphors here, but
you're a brave man. But it's not an easy time to be young and unmarried and wanting to pursue marriage, because we're reaping what we've sown as a culture. Men and women have been turned off on marriage. We're facing a marriage crisis. It's a historic low for marriage in our culture right now. And so that means that's affecting the church. We're also in a generation of apostasy. I mean, the church is hemorrhaging souls. People are walking away from their faith. They're being indoctrinated by their education and secularized and leaving the faith that their family tried to instill in them. And that means there's a shortage of quality spouses available. So singles need all the help they can get. We're not trying to be the only game in town. We're trying to provide one solution. And we want, certainly we want you plugged into a healthy local church as much as is possible and available. And that's plan A. And then, if you're not meeting someone there, then Dominion dating could be a good option for you. So,
Yellow Moth asked, have you talked to Dean from Sovereign Grace Singles? I don't know who that is, but maybe you might.
Well, I'm going to say something. I haven't talked to him. I haven't. Be glad to. And I'll just say this. There's one solid Christian dating site that's when I was being piled on by examining Doug Wilson, I saw them there advertising. So if you want to marry a feminist that's on examining Doug Wilson, there's at least one dating site that's catering to them. I won't give their name, but I'm happy to meet with anyone, but we're trying to reach our niche and carve that out. So
what are your thoughts on whether, you know, pastors should use anonymous accounts to kind of avoid falling into situations like yours? Do you think that that's wise, or do you think that this is a total shift in gears? I know, sure. But it's like, I kind of want to address like the whole anonymous accounts debate, because it seems like, you know, social media, you know, activists help do you in.
I think we need both. I think there's a good argument to be made for anonymous internet presence. But we also need people willing to put their name and their face behind their words. I think we need both, and we can be on the same team. I think there's pros and cons to both. I think anyone that's thinking about putting their face and their name behind what they're standing for online, you need to know that it will cost you. I'm blacklisted in ministry. I can't go out and just get a pastorate anymore. So I would say, you know, if I had to do it over again, I might consider an anonymous presence. But the things that I want to accomplish, I think I eventually came to the conclusion that I can't accomplish those things anonymously.
Yeah, I don't think you can do minion dating and be anonymous. That's right.
You have to.
You have to be like a success story yourself in dating in order to really launch a dating site.
Well, there you have to put your name by your product and your service if you want people to buy into it. If you're not willing to do that, if you're not willing to count the cost for your own project or your own mission, you can't expect others to believe in it or buy into it. And for me, I think the reason I put my face and my name out there is because I recognize in our day, the greatest shortage is leadership and courage. And I didn't take that mantle on lightly, but I've just decided, you know, for a long time, probably, you know, for a couple of decades now, I've decided someone has to lead, and I want to be one of those guys that takes a stand. And so I do that, but it comes at a cost.
And yeah, I mean, a lot of people like to disparage, you know, anons on the internet. I'll never do that. And what's funny is, you know, the Twitter handle I got below, you know, at evangelicaldw is my non-anonymous. Oh, none of this is anonymous because I'm pretty open about who I am, even to some degree where I live. And I have no small online footprint. But nonetheless, you know, people see, oh, this is a, they don't recognize it as a brand account. But they're like, oh, you're an anonymous person. How dare you? You know, you're not willing to put your name or face behind what you. Yeah. It's like, I don't even publish under a pen name.
Yeah.
People take you more seriously when you're anonymous. I feel like
they take you more serious.
I feel like they do. Like, Look at the accounts that have gained a lot of prominence. They don't use their actual name. You know, a lot of them don't. So if you have a pithy name, it'll do you well.
But, well, I would say my observation would be the accounts that get a lot of traction that are anonymous, or it's because they're resonating. Their content is good.
Right.
They're resonating. They probably would get even more traction and more, I think, have more weight if they put their name behind it. But
I don't know. Is the guy behind Cat Turd getting more traction if he uses his name rather than Cat Turd?
Yeah. Well, so I guess you could argue it's kind of like the Batman symbol. At some point, an anonymous figure becomes kind of an icon or kind of a symbol. And in that sense, you know, maybe yeah, there's an argument to be made. But I would say this, the anonymous guys that are doing good work,
right,
that are on our team, many of them should stay anonymous, probably most of them, because they're protecting their families, their ability to provide for their families. And this is just kind of something they do in the shadows. You know, they do it on the side. And we have an army of anonymous people on our team, and they are moving the Overton window in important ways. And that's a team effort. And so I would just say, whichever way you do it, you have to count the cost, because the anonymous has pitfalls too. And I think, I would just say, if you're anonymous, I think it's good to let key people in your life know that's you, and that they can hold you accountable. Because when you're not accountable to anyone, and Proverbs says this, you know, when you isolate yourself, you break out.
I was just going to reference that verse because I read it last night.
Yeah. Yeah. When you don't answer to anyone and you're left alone to your own, you know, thoughts and whims, you can really become a fool.
Proverbs 18:1, I think.
Yeah. Maybe
the verse.
Yeah. So you don't want to cut yourself off from accountability and brotherhood that keeps you in the right mindset and the right, you know, because you want to honor God and be truthful and not in your flesh. And when you're fighting the good fight all day and I'm here for it, but it's hard to switch gears sometimes. So, you know, if you become a Twitter keyboard warrior, and you don't have people, good brothers in your life, it can consume you. So, it can make you miserable for your family and it can zap your joy and your bitterness. So, you know, there's okay. Just things to be.
Definitely got to be a jolly warrior.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, Formosan Black Bear asks, have you talked to Bobby Gilstrap? He's a Southern Baptist activist who has faced, I believe, wrongful termination in his story. I'm not overly familiar with it. I actually have. I don't know if you have.
I don't know Dr. Bobby Gilstrap. I do not. I will have to keep that name in mind.
Yeah, so you might have some sort of commonality that's being referenced.
I appreciate
I'll give a last call for questions. But I guess my final question is, you know, what's your plan going forward from here? You know, I guess what's your game plan right now, and, you know, plans in the future? You know, are you getting any job offers from I guess the publicity that this has gotten? Or
well, I've had good friends and different people reach out to me just to tell me they're praying for me, and if I need something, give them a call. So I appreciate all the encouragement, the prayers, and the support. And, you know, big picture, I think planting a church is probably going to be the path forward. I don't know exactly what that looks like yet. As I said in an interview earlier this week, I would love to connect with people that are like-minded and you know, kind of going to have a lot of affinity with me around my personal doctrinal distinctives, which would be Reformed Baptist and Patriarchal. I'm post-mill, anyone that's got some fight in them, you don't have to, you know, be exactly the same eschatology or whatever. But yeah, I would like to connect with some folks. Would love to find a like-minded brother that wants to plant a church with me. So that's one thing I'm praying that comes out of this is just charting a path forward to find some like-minded people and see where I land.
All right. So along those lines, is it interesting that you think, you know, planting the church is the next move? Have you heard of TruthScript? You know, John Harris as Discerning Christians. I don't know if you've ever heard of that. Mm-hmm. That might be a good networking resource. And it can also help you find a church. Yeah. I mean, I won't say it's foolproof, but it can definitely help in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Yeah. If there's a church that likes my brand.
I mean, I think they have a job. They have a job board.
Okay. Well, I appreciate that. That's a good spot for me to look. And if there's a church that is interested in talking with me, they're welcome to call me, but I don't want to take my wife through the fire again with a church that's not a good fit for me.
Right. I imagine that can be pretty taxing on a family.
Yeah. It's harder on the wives always. So the wives, I don't have multiple wives, but clear that up before the feminist watch your interview. My wife, it's hard on my wife.
Yeah. So anyway, all right, we got a question about my book. I in the interest of self-serving, I must oblige.
Please. So tell us about this book.
So it's going to be called Winning Not Winsome. And, you know, it's interesting because I actually got the two books that might be most like it crossed. If you were to breed Andrew Isker's Boniface Option with Megan Basham's Shepherds for Sale, it's kind of like if those two books had a baby. Now that I'm finally reading Megan Basham's book, I'm seeing a little bit of that, because in terms of, like, you know, names and receipts, I do a lot of that. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, you know, what is the more edifying nature of the content, it's supposed to be more practical. It's definitely closer to the Boniface Option, which it was mostly written before I read the Boniface Option. And obviously when I read Shepherds for Sale, because I didn't get the advanced copy.
Oh, but, man.
I know. I missed out. I'm on the first chapter of her book. So that's cool. I'm just about to get to the Gavin Ortland part.
Well, I enjoyed the Boniface Option. So I have a feeling your book would be a good book.
Yeah. So, and it's close to that. It is a lot more, you know, receipts and, you know, stuff like that. Okay. So closer, you know, again, if you cross those two books that I just mentioned together, that's kind of what my book would be like. And it was largely written before I read either. But anyway, the update that I got is that it's being sent to print. So we could. I was told 2 to 3 weeks before I'd get my advanced copies, but apparently it's now 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
So maybe I was premature, but 3 weeks, hopefully. And then it's going to have like 40 days of pre-order, and then it's going to debut, I think.
Sweet.
Will work.
Sweet.
So it could be late September release because of the but the pre-ordering will be sooner than that, I think.
Good
news. We are coming down the final stretch.
I'm halfway through writing a book, and I can tell you it's a lot of hard work. So good job on you.
It took longer to do the post writing of the book than it did to write the book. I think I wrote starting in 2021.
Okay.
So this is a long journey, and a lot of it's been my fault, but that's before I got things rolling with the publisher and stuff like that. So a lot of it's been my fault, but nonetheless, you know, I don't have a lot of free time. I have a day job. I do this. I have a family, wife and kids. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I have a massive personal project that's more a business venture that I'm trying to work on as well. Mm-hmm. I'm also an activist in our local Republican club. I did run for office while doing this book in 2022. So I have a lot of stuff going on. So it's hard. Like, I don't have time to start another book right now, even though I have like three or four books that I want to write, including one that I've been working on for like a decade and have been editing, mm-hmm. you know, or rewriting this concept for. So it's just taxing. But the next book, hopefully, you know, I can strike a deal with some small Christian publisher, mm-hmm. and we can just, you know, be pretty base, because I'm thinking the next book will be called Six Idols to Smash.
Oh, nice.
The numerology of six, but you know, I think that's going to be the next book.
Okay. Well, let me know when your book comes out. I want to see it.
But this book is called Winning Not Winsome, 10 Commandments of Spiritual Warfare. And it's coming out this year. I need a ghostwriter. You might not be wrong, but yes, a good ghostwriter can copy style. They're going to have to learn a lot of SpongeBob references though.
There you go.
I joke because I think I only make one SpongeBob reference in my entire book, but
you gotta get AI to write your next one, man.
It's not there yet. Like ChatGPT got worse after they neutered it. You know, it was, you know, you could trick ChatGPT into being based, mm-hmm. but then when they corrected that, it's just been going downhill. It can't even do base. It can't do math problems anymore and stuff like that. So I can't trust it.
No, doesn't sound like
I do use AI sometimes to write, but you gotta be very limited in what you use it for.
That's right.
So anyway, I guess that's thank you for coming on. Where can people find you or reach out for support and stuff like that?
So if you want to read my blog, go to bringtheheat.substack.com, bringtheheat.substack.com. If you are single and need some help trying to get a spouse, get married, go to dominiondating.com. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's JB_Durham, my last name Durham 80. So I think it's in my name up here somewhere, wherever my name is.
We had a question about Zachary Garris, who also runs a Christian publishing service. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize. Yeah. Or I forgot that he did that, you know, by the time that I was on my publisher.
Zach Garris is one of the stoutest men on Twitter. He's a great guy, a great pastor, and he's written two seminal books on masculine Christianity. So I would recommend both of them. So,
And then, love Zach Garris. I didn't do the whole like and subscribe thing yet because I guess slacking a little bit, but definitely drop a like on your way out.
If you haven't liked or subscribed to Evangelical Dark Web, you need to get with the program. Come on, people.
Program. If you've been around this long and you haven't dropped a like and subscribe, what are you doing?
What are you doing? Get with it.
Anyway, have a blessed night. Stay based, Crisis King, and we will catch.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.